Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
All right, you're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing this week. We've got John Duggan with us in studio. John, how are you getting on?
Great, you're 18 days to Cheltenham, buzzing about it.
I was going to ask how long, and you were like 18 days, 5 minutes,
yeah.
6 hours.
Yeah.
Not that we're counting down, but we are at this
We stage. Are counting, Ger. I just buzzed about it. And we've all the stable visits this week with Gordon and Willie and Tom is down there, Tom Malone. And it's a case now getting the homework done and getting the videos replayed and getting into a bit of a bunker about your own opinions and your own journey to the course and the week. And everybody's planning that.
The last kind of prep runs are happening.
Yeah. This is actually a good time to back outsiders and maybe horses from other yards. I remember going to Leopardstown a few years ago and making a killing on outsiders from like kind of shoulder yards, because all the big yards had been, their whole day at Leopardstown before Christmas is about schooling horses for Cheltenham. So maybe, not that I'm saying that they don't have any attention on the racing, but maybe it's not as clear in their mind as
in
be.
Some other yards get to focus on these races,
yes,
as highlights of the year, knowing,
yeah,
full well that, yeah, some of the other horses will be getting ready.
Exactly. So Mount Leinster's running on Sunday at Naas, and he might not be going to Cheltenham. He might be going to Cheltenham. Andy Dufresne, I know, is not going to Cheltenham. So we're getting to the stage where you really want to be having your run now. You don't want to be getting too much on from now to be having another run, because then you won't be able to peak in the week.
Okay, so lots of strategy to go into this weekend. We'll talk about that a bit more later on in the show. As ever, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can leave a comment on whatever stream you're watching this on, because obviously we stream live across all of Off the Ball social channels every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and then we're live again on the radio after 8. Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the new Twitter account at HRI Racing, and the hashtag is Every Racing Moment. Our special guest this week, though, is trainer Brian McMahon. Brian, how are you doing? Congratulations on a great week last week.
Yeah, thanks very much, Sherry. Yeah, it was a good day last Sunday, and we've been on a bit of a high since, so yeah, it's pretty good.
So you had a double last Sunday. Was it John was saying
150-1, Seskinan and Semolek.
Yeah, a score would have been nice, John, wouldn't it, on the double?
That's your Cheltenham money, Brian.
Yeah.
And a bit more.
we got a few quid out of it, so listen, you need to, the game is tough enough, and you need to try and make hay and collect a few quid when they do win. So yeah, thankfully we got a few bills paid this week.
Did you do the double, Brian?
I did, John. I fancied the both of them, to be fair. They were in great nick, and the conditions of the races, the ground conditions, everything was lining up, and it's just very rare that happens. I thought beforehand, this is, well, sure, it's you know, I get two winners a year, I'm not going to have two in a day, but sure, I'm just going, for the sake of a couple of quid, I'm going to chance to have an each way double. And yeah, when the first fella won, I said, well, that's that. The second fella has absolutely no chance. He'd want to be 100-1 to back it, but yeah, I suppose, you know, as Ben Morrison says, you get days like this, and that was one of them, you know. I suppose what's rare is wonderful.
You talked about having two winners a year. Just for people who are unfamiliar with your yard, how many horses do you actually have in training?
Six. Well, I'm a restricted trainer, Ger, so that means you can only have four returned in training at any, as part of your license, four returned in training at any one time. Now, like most things, you know, there's small bits and pieces of ways around it. So you can have four in at one time, but you can return one out and return another fella back in. So I have six, seven, eight, that kind of way. I suppose constant six kind of thing.
The other thing about it being on a high all week, you're not a full-time trainer with that number of horses in the yard. You have a day job, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, Ger. I'm a biochemist, and I work in an American multinational over in Tulla and in East Clare. I tried the training full time up to 2016-2017, and I just couldn't make it pay, to be honest. You'd be stone broke most of the time, just trying to go from day to day. And I said, you know, this can't continue. like, as I said, just I give 8 years in college studying biochemistry. I says I may as well try and make some of the use out of that and get a few quid. And I thought at the start, you know, I said, well, I'll give this 6 months, get a few quid and go back at it full time. But, you know, when I came in, I really enjoyed it, especially meeting different people and people that have... I came in Monday morning and no one had a breeze, you know, that had two winners at the weekend. And that sort of puts it into perspective and takes you outside the racing bubble, which is very important. Like, Joe, I deal a good bit with the Chinese, we're in Med Device and we're, I'm over and back to China a good bit. We speak with them most mornings, so you see the trouble that they're having with the, you know, they've been locked up in their houses with the last 4 or 5 weeks, and you see, you know, there's a much much bigger world out there than racing, and when you're in the thick of it full time, and you know, every runner was so important because you needed it to get the diesel home. When you're in that sort of a cocoon, it becomes all consuming, and this with the job, it just gives you a bit of perspective, and you don't put yourself under the same pressure then, you know.
Yeah, and you get to enjoy it a bit more. Can you talk to us a bit about that decision then to go back into the workforce? Obviously, having spent 8 years in college, you knew at some point that this might be an option, and you built the fallback for yourself. But I'd say there's still a little bit of heartbreak when you go from, I'm chasing my dream here, to, you know, becoming a worker again. And was that a difficult decision over a period of time, or did it just become inevitable?
Well, I suppose the 8 years in college, I probably could have sped that up a little bit if I'd went in a bit more. But anyways, that's it took that.
The scenic route, Brian.
Yeah, exactly, John. Yeah, exactly. But I suppose I started from zero base, Ger. So I never had and still don't. I didn't harbour any ambitions of building up a big string of 50 horses. You know, I was just happy with the lifestyle of riding out, going racing, and the buzz and the kick out of it is, you know, I'd imagine it's like being on some sort of drugs. It's just the buzz out of a winner is keeps you going. It keeps you going for a long time. Like,
how does it compare to scoring the winning goal in a 1997 All-Ireland winning final against Galway for the banner, Brian? Because you won the minor title on the same day the seniors won.
That's right, John. Yeah, that was a fantastic day and a fantastic year. Just to be a Clare man, you know, the county was on an absolute high. Everyone was, you know, walking around with their chests out, like, for the first time in. Since 95, there was a great buzz and an atmosphere around the county. Like, I remember going into Flannans as a first year, and the Tip lads and the Borders, the Tip lads and the Galway lads, they'd be laughing at the Clare lads, you know, been trounced in Munster finals. So we were kind of used to that, and to go around then, in those years with chest outs, and we were, you know, All Ireland champions, and in 97, it just felt inevitable. That the seniors were going to win, and we were just riding on their coattails, and definitely a rising tide lifts all boats, and it was super. Obviously, I had a terrible game in the final, so, you know, while you'd be delighted to win, you'd be kind of disappointed in yourself that you probably didn't play as well as you'd have hoped to play, but. Sure, you know, it's kind of irrelevant now, yeah, and after a while it becomes irrelevant, but...
Sorry, hang on, you were disappointed with your own performance on the day?
Yeah, I was out of it. I was marking a guy called Owen McDonough. He was the Galway captain, and Joe, his dad, was president of GAA at the time, and so they were, you know, I guess the PR guys were hoping that Joe would get to present the cup to his son, and Owen was definitely hoping that, because he gave me an awful skinning on the day, and I got a goal, all right, but it was a Gary Lineker effort from about a yard and a half that I don't know what part of it it hit me, but it went in anyways. But you would be selfishly thinking a little bit about that at the time, and But I guess there's the buzz would be similar, even though there is very few, very little to match the buzz of a winner, to be honest.
I mean, it's a 2-point game at the end, and you scored a goal in the middle of it. I would certainly be going, I scored the winning goal in an Ireland final.
Jared, don't worry about that. We definitely lived off it for far too long, and above in UCG, Tony Horst Regan, who was in charge of the sports department and the hurling team, and it was a good few of us went up on scholarship, and that scholarship money wasn't spent buying boots and gear. So we made plenty of use of it, all right.
And come here, who was on the team? Like anybody who actually makes it as a senior in the next couple of years?
No, do you know, and I guess it's one of those things. John Redden was captain, and he went and played an All Ireland senior. But it was one of those things. Gro Constantine played senior, right? But it was one of those things. I think that where, a minor team that makes a breakthrough, the kind of. You see, it's happening in Westmeath, the footballers in Leash, they kind of go off the rails a little bit, and it's subsequent teams that come through, and my brother was on the minor team the following year, and I suppose he could see the error of our ways, and he went on to play senior for 10 years for Clare, and lots of them, Tony Griffin, Tony Carmody, Jerry Quinn, all came after that team, and it's definitely a thing, because it's replicated around the country, you know.
Yeah, totally. So there's some, like, if you look at some of the Kilkenny lads who didn't win at minor, go on to become all-time greats.
Well, Henry Shefflin.
Henry was on the Kilkenny team that we beat in the semi-final that year. And they do say that, a lot of it, David Tierney was on the Galway team and Dermot Clunan, and a lot of it, if you don't get success at that age, I guess it breeds hunger rather than, going around with a full belly.
And one last thing, I'm always interested in how a team that wins a minor All-Ireland is perceived in the aftermath, that everybody's like, God, you guys have made it now, particularly on the day when the seniors have done, because you get to go to all the senior functions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we were on their coattails at all the functions, and looking back at it, it was probably too much, we probably believed our own hype a little bit. And listen, then you're only minor at the time, and there's a lot of, it can be like a precocious 2-year-old horse. You've got to develop mentally and physically, and just be a good enough hurler. And there's probably lots that were good enough at that age, but weren't good enough. That's definitely a combination. Definitely was applied to my case as well as not being as near as committed as I wish I had been in the subsequent years.
My dad was from Quinn, Brian, and that 1997 final was one of the best days of my life, and the senior game was incredible, and Clare were hurled the best hurling that Clare ever hurled in that period. They hurled in about 20 minutes at the start of the second half, and Tipperary scored two leg goals. Dave Fitzgerald saves from John Lahey. James O'Connor puts it over the other end. Lochnan's behind the goal, fist pumping, and when the final whistle went, we just went bananas, because we've beaten Cork, Tipperary and Kilkenny that year, Tipperary twice. But if you're on such a high after the minor game, Brian, did you watch the senior game? How are you feeling? Were you still buzzed?
Yeah,
what was the kind
I can remember. I can remember every score, all those moments that you listed out, John. But I suppose most Clare people would, But like I said, there was an air of inevitability about the seniors all year not in the last minute of an All Ireland does Liam Cahill get a goal off of Brian Lohan to win the All Ireland for Tip. That that just doesn't happen to Lohan, and there was nothing sure that Clare would go down the field and get another score, it was magic. Like James O'Connor, who himself would say he had a very mixed Midland All Ireland final in 1995. For the ball to be popped out to him from Colin Lynch and into Hill 16 under only strikes over the bar to win it. Like, I remember the medal ceremony. They played U2's Perfect Day, and it was just like that.
Yeah, Jamesy was unstoppable that year. When did the racing bug happen? Are you from a racing family?
No, there's no horses at all in our family, or nothing to do with it. It was when we were in college, Ger. We were knocking around Wood Quay there when we were meant to be in lectures in UCG, and we'd been in the Ladbrokes betting office and the Goldpost pub next door, and we were kind of just drinking pints and having bets. And I said there was some buzz out of it. I loved kind of, and this I think is, you know, where racing can really come into its own. There's just a lot of, you know, John, a lot of nuance about it, and the more you learn about it, the more intriguing it becomes, and then it takes a hold of you, and it started from there. I was Paddy Hassett was with us in college, and his dad trained down in Quinn, Donny, and I said, geez, rather than being on the periphery of this, I'd love to actually go and see what a yard it looked like. So I was there, wasn't there 10 minutes, and they put me up on a horse up the gallop, never ridden before. Went up the gallop at a million miles an hour and thought, this is for me. And it went from there. You squint in weekends and any chance I got at holidays or anything like that. And
working, like cleaning out and doing
because I loved it. Yeah, mucking out and riding out. Like, I'd say, you know, the first month I was going, or the first couple of months, I'd say fall off 3-4 times a morning. But the second month then maybe only fall off twice, and you just kind of, I was winging it away, to be honest. And the lads were really good, you know. It gave me a good slagging every time I fell off, and that made you hang on a bit better. And after that, then, so I'd come down from Dublin. I was in UCD at the time, and I got a job then back in Clare, and it was into the teeth of the recession, 2009, I'd say, and we got made redundant, and I said, geez, chance now, I'll go at it full time. So I wrote off to 5 or 6 of the top trainers in England, and Nicky Henderson got back to me. It must have been stuck for staff. He was stuck for staff, and gave me a job as a stable lad. So
can I just everybody needs to pay attention to this bit, right? So you ride off to Real Madrid and Man United and Barcelona, and Real Madrid are like, yeah, no problems, come on down.
Yeah, that's close enough to how it was. Now, I was writing off with a CV that'd make Gareth Bale blush. In actual fact, it was it should have just read Brian McMahon Chancer, but like that, I guess I just winged it, and I remember Corky Brown, who'd be the famed head lad there. I think Nicky wanted to fire me after a week, and he'd have been right to, but Corky just took some bit of a shine to me and told the governor to say he's all right, give him another chance. And by degrees then, it just, you know, you got into the hang of it a lot better, and then it went from there. But
What had you done that made Nicky Henderson want to fire you?
Heaps of different things, but I think my saddle went sideways one day in the gallop. I just had the girths tightened enough. I wasn't, you know, and the Hassans won't mind me saying this, but when we went over to England, like, you'd have your non-slip, you'd have a soft pad, hard pad, a sheet, and girths and straps coming from everywhere that I wasn't used to at all. And the tack just went sideways with me on the gallop, and I went out the side door, and Nicky was like, absolutely doing his nut. But anyways, I had Corky batting for me, I gradually improved and got into the hang of things, and it was marvelous time to be over there. Like, the quality of horse was unbelievable. You know, it was Sprinter Sacra and Binocular, Punchestones, Bob's worth. He was my ride until they found out he was a half decent, and then the one of the good jockeys on him. But the right Barry Geraghty had just taken over from Mick Fitz and you'd Felix de Giles and Dave Bass, Jerry McGrath. Jerry McGrath had just started at the same time as me, and we became really good mates. We're very good mates still. We'd speak a couple of times a week, and I go over to Lambourne and stay with him. And Nico de Boinville had just started, and it was a really good time to be there.
Big operation, Brian. Big operation.
Yeah.
What was Nicky's secret to success, do you think?
It's really hard to know, John. Like, he's really good facilities, which I guess is there's a grass, a mile and a quarter grass gallop with a slight incline that he could gallop the horses together in a bunch, and it was like a mini race day. I guess they'd be kind of half hardened, like maybe like the Kilkenny hurlers, even though he wasn't hard on the horses, but they just got a kind of a quality of training that, and he, like Cheltenham this next week or in 3 weeks time, that's his All-Ireland. He doesn't really mind what happens up to that. Everything is geared towards Cheltenham, so horses would be brought along really, really slowly, but a week before Cheltenham they'd be really fit and they'd be awful fresh. You'd have loose ones everywhere the week before Cheltenham. They were in such good form getting the riders off, and I think that's, he's patient, like, and but I suppose when he has the credit in the bank, he's able to be patient with get owners to be patient with him, and it's hard to put your finger on it. Like,
Jerry McGrath still a mate. Brian, is Nicky's best one for Cheltenham is a Shishkin?
I was in Lambourne last week, John, and I was just asking Jerry, how does Siskin and Chantry House work together, or have they worked together? And he said they have gone up the grass a couple of times together, and there wouldn't be a hair's breadth between them. And Chantry House is three times the price of Siskin. So, yeah, I was on the Antipost book after that, and I had a few quid on Chantry House. And he said he's owned one in the Ballymore, a horse called Glynn. He's really looking forward to riding that. He thinks it's a big chance.
Fascinating stuff. And you had a horse who went to Cheltenham a few years ago, Powers Bomb in 2015, won at Galway, and then you had a runner at Cheltenham that was nearly a winner, finished behind Tully East in a novice handicap chase, and I think two out, he was in the lead.
Yeah, I actually jumped the last in front, John, and my God, he gave us some thrill. But he'd been a little keen through his race, and he jumped only middling, and I'd say he had, he was in the red coming to the last in terms of his petrol, and that hill found him out. Then he was passed up the hill and he finished fourth in the end. But it was a marvellous run, to be fair. And I was hoping to get him over there this year, but he ran in Thurles yesterday and he just kind of got stuck in the ground a little bit, and he probably won't get into the Grand Annual now.
Brian, what was the point of going over to Nicky Henderson? Was that your dream at that stage to use that as a springboard to become a full-time trainer? Is that what was the thought process?
Yeah, I'd say so, Gerard. Subconsciously, it gives you to say that you were in Nicky's for a couple of seasons, it gives you kind of a bit of credit or a bit of standing to say, well, you know, this fella might have, you know, something what he's talking about. If he's kept his ears open at all, he'll have learned something. And I guess that was the idea behind it. Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, at the time, there was not a whole pile happening here. Like, there probably wasn't too many jobs in racing, and in my industry, you know, it was tight. Like,
so the decision to come home, and was that straight away to come home and open up your own yard?
No. So, I gave 3 years in England, and you know, obviously I was around 30 when I went over, so it was 33, 34, you know, on £200 or £190 a week, this isn't going to be sustainable for too much longer. So I got a job in Sligo, they were making blood tests for horses. So sort of combining both the science and the racing and the horses. And I did it for about a year, and you know, we'd taken blood from the horses and from a racing yard in Sligo, and I'd go out and take blood and come back into the lab and test it. And after a while, I was going out riding a lot, riding two lots, and then I was half the day out in the racing yard and an hour in the lab, and I said, well, sure, I'm going to go and do this full time.
And at that point, obviously, again, that's a big leap. It's like, okay, I've got to back myself, and I've got to take all the things that I've learned from everything, really, and become a businessman. At the same time, the art of training as well. So what was that like? That must have been a big decision, and also you must have loved it.
Yeah, a big decision. It was a tough decision, Ger. And I had a girlfriend at the time that had moved over from Lambourne with me. She was into horses, and she was not best pleased by it, like, and I just wanted to do it, and I was driven at that stage. I spent every hour of the day in the yard trying to make the thing work. And I suppose when you're at that, you can't see the wood from the trees. You know, I got a winner in the first couple of months, and then it went really slack, and I was probably stressed way more than I should have been, and stressed about the thing, and Frankie went back to England then after that, it is enjoyable, but it has, it definitely has negative consequences too. You know, when cash is tight and you put yourself under pressure, the good days are great, but the bad days are not great either.
Yeah. So, it's the same question really I asked earlier on. And that obviously you lived through that, and there's like. The life of the artist somewhat, where you have to live this thing every day and you don't really know what finance is going to come through at the end. That's kind of in the lap of the sporting gods. The decision to have tried that and then for it to have worked to the level that it worked, and to go back and go, actually, I can do these two things. I can have a life where there's balance. I guess it's like an intercounter GAA player now, striving for a bit of balance and having a day job and having this thing that you're good at and you love. Is this the happiest that you've been in your life then?
Yeah, definitely. And also, like, the mistakes I made when I started off, I needed to make them to learn from them, you know. If I hadn't gone and done it, you wouldn't have learned from all those mistakes, and to have the perspective now that, well, they will run terrible for a while, but not panic, they'll come around again. So definitely in a good enough place now. The boss Tuesday morning, I got a text off the boss on Tuesday evening, and Monday evening, and he says, can I see you tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock? And I was like, Jesus. And they need to, the work needs to get its fair share too, and probably, you know, for the last while, there's only been one winner, but he's given me a good shake up there now, and I need to probably do a little bit more while I'm in work.
Or give him the tips.
Yeah, where's my double? 150-1 double.
That's a panacea for everything.
Yeah. So his boss is actually a good racing man. So
the boss's boss.
Yeah, exactly. I think if I get in any more trouble, I'll just go over his head.
Two quick questions coming in, one by text. Does being a biochemist by day mean that Brian is very scientific in his approach to training horses, or does he do it by feel?
I think it's by feel, but you try question things in your head and see, does this make sense? And you know, for example, Powersbomb ran yesterday and ran okay. He finished fifth, but he turned in the lead and he faded. And I'm going home then in the Jeep with my neighbour and the guy I work with, John Staunton. We're going through things in our head of, you know, obviously you can't asked the horse why did he fail, and you're then trying to come up with theories of you know why he might have failed, and you're doing that a lot. But so it's by feel, and then you know propose a theory and see does that actually make sense, or could that work. So it's the scientific background helps with reasoning, but we'd be far from methodical about, like, you know, we'd be riding out there in the dark and it'd be, you know, things can be up in a bit of a heap, so we wouldn't be methodical like that, but it helps with reasoning of why things are as they are.
Yeah, okay. So riding out in the dark, even just the practicalities of riding after a day's, riding out after a day's work, does that mean you need to do floodlights, or like are the horses spooked?
No, they're used to that. When evening racing comes in now, we should have an awful advantage, because sure we don't get going until the lads around would say, you know, are you right now, or is it not dark enough for you yet? Like, so you know, but that, you know, from November through to about now, it's really tight for time. So yeah, we'd have the high vis jackets on and just trust that the horses know where they're going. And that's yeah, but they get out, and you know horses are a creature of routine, so you know it doesn't really matter to them after a while once they get used to going out in the evenings and chilling out during the day. You know, they just get used to it.
Yeah, that makes sense. We'll definitely look out for your horses for the evening meetings. And then another one from Grace on YouTube wants to know, what did you think of the handicapper's reaction to last week's win? £7 to a 14-year-old seems harsh.
I think he got six. Seskinan got six, and you don't mind getting weight when the thing has won, because you've collected a few quid, maybe off betting, backing him, and you've collected a few quid in the prize money, and you don't mind. It's when they finish second or third and you get £2 or £3 for not getting the win, that's when you find it harsh. So no, I'd have no qualms with it, to be honest.
That's fair enough.
Brian, does this like double last weekend change anything for you? Are you still going to combine the biochemistry job and the training? Have you been offered horses in the last few months? What's the kind of 12 to 18 month plan now for you? Have you thought about that far?
Yeah, a little. I've got a good few calls, John, during the week, and lads looking to give horses. But I'm happy enough with the way it's going. I'll try keep the 6 to 8 horses, and I have no plans to expand too much more than that. I'm just maybe if I can improve the quality a little bit and maybe replace a couple that are not pulling their weight, that's the way to go. But I've no great desire or ambition to get more, you know.
All right, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Let's move on, because the Tote Irish Injured Jockeys Charity Fund back on track last week after Keith Donoghue's selection. Queensbrook ran out a very easy winner last weekend at Goran Park. 20 lengths, I think, 20 odd lengths. I was looking at the result and going,
did you back it?
Of course I did. This fund now stands at €630, and we will look to keep the momentum going this week. The Bobby Doe Chase is the feature tomorrow at Ferry House, their last meeting before the Easter Festival. On Sunday, there's a high class 7 race card from Nace as well. Meanwhile, in the UK, there's going to be 5 graded races coming from Kempton Park, which should see plenty of Cheltenham challengers emerge. And a reminder, new Tote customers can get up to €50 cash back for opening a new account. Check out thetote.com for more details. We should talk about what's going on in Ireland first.
Yeah, we should. Ferry House tomorrow. We got a Grade 3. This racing TV thing, the race times are like greyhound times, or like train times. 2:17, the Grade 3 juvenile hurdle. Battle of Wills, rated 96 in the flat for Gordon Elliott, Davy Russell. Willie Mullins, Game and Original, could be anything. Paul Tannen picks that one, and Willie's got a few runners. So, but not a race to really have a bet in. The Bobby Joe Chase, a lot of horses here that are light of better days, including Bell's Hill, who's gone off the boil. Pleasant Company's target is probably the Grand National. Sub-Lieutenant hasn't been running that well. Maybe Acapella Bourgeois was third in the Irish Grand National last year. Maybe Acapella Bourgeois, but once again, I'm not that inspired by it. On Sunday in Nace, we got a Grade 3 chase over 2 miles at 2:10. Articulum is a course and distance winner. If he stays in his feet, he's like been falling and unseating all over the place. He was third in the Arkett at Cheltenham last year. I think Articulum might have a going day and might have a winning day on Sunday at Naas. Then the 3.10, a grade two novice hurdle. I like the look of Mount Leinster. Mount Leinster was very impressive for William Mullins over Christmas. Disappointed last time out on a hot race, but Mount Leinster might not be going to Cheltenham. He might be, but he might not be. And I think he might deserve another chance, Mount Leinster, in the red and white colours for William Mullins.
When there's a bit of a debate about a horse going to Cheltenham and the horse is running this weekend, they're like absolutely pushing the horse to the absolute maximum to see if it's worthy of his place in Cheltenham, or they're...
No, I still think they would leave a bit. They would still leave a bit. And maybe the proximity of his entry would suggest to me that he's not going. Like, Andrew Dufresne is in the race and he's not going to Cheltenham. Maybe they need to take a bit more time with this horse, who can be a little bit in and out at Leinster.
Okay. Let me just get some of Brian's thoughts on that. Brian, what have you got this weekend running yourself?
Nothing, Chair. Right. I don't think. No.
Fair enough.
Nothing.
And have you any thoughts on what's happening in Fairy House tomorrow?
I was in Fairy House about 3 weeks ago, and Arsaval Oliver McKiernan's won the maiden hurdle there, and I see he runs off 1:16 on Sunday, and he looked a proper horse in the making, a horse called Aaron's Day. And I think off 1:16, he has, he could have anted up to maybe a stone in hand. I think he'll win. And Saturday in Kempton in the Kingwell, I was speaking to Tom Simmons, who was assistant to Nicky when I was there, and we stayed good old buddies, and he runs a horse called Song for Someone, and he said he's really improving, and to win the Kingwell, he doesn't need to improve all that much, and I'll be absolutely delighted for Tom. He's a gent, and he's probably not hit the headlines the way his talent would deserve, and to win a Kingwell on Saturday would be a great fill-up for him and the yard, and I think he's a right chance.
Okay, so Song for Someone on Saturday, Kempton, and Aaron's Day on Sunday.
Yeah, 11-4 Song for Someone, a second favourite at the moment in a race that I would probably agree with Brian. Like, should a battle favourite, but as a handicap hurdler. When Oliver McKiernan does have a good one, he tends to do well with a member. Follow the Plan had a great run a few years ago with Oliver, and he's consistent to push himself for the game. The one I'm going for the charity bet, look, you can always bet on the UK racing on the tote. It doesn't always have to be Irish racing. I was at Leopardstown at Christmas and had a few bets on the Welsh National through the tote. So the one I'm going to go for each way, the 2:45 at Newcastle, the Eider Chase, is a marathon, a 4 mile chase, one of these kind of Grand National trials. The horse is Glittering Love for Nicky Richards, trained up in the north of England. Progressive horse, lightly raced, has been running at the track, was third last time. I think a very interesting runner, between 7 and 10 to 1. Glittering Love in the 2:45 at Newcastle tomorrow. But we'll definitely pull some of yours out as well, Brian, and put them in at a post on offtheball.com, because you've said some very interesting things. Do you have one for Cheltenham? That maybe not of the Nicky ones, but is there one horse you're really looking forward to seeing at Cheltenham?
I'm going to put up my own fella, John. Shane Malek and the Kim Muir. I just had a look there on the phone before coming on, and he's a 50-1 poke, and the 3 miles, 2 furlongs will
we like that
rightly play at his strength. So I'd have a few quid each way in him. Like, it'd be, it'd be beyond belief. But I think he's a fair chance. Yeah,
who's going to ride it?
Owen Mahon. So Owen rides out with me and every day, and he's serious man to work and a serious man to ride, and he won it on Sunday, and he'll ride it again, take £7 off, and he's great value for the £7.
Brian, we've people on who obviously are involved in some of the biggest sports organizations in the world. That's the level of powerhouse that we have on. But your lifestyle seems like something that I think a lot of people watching are going to be like, that guy has it. He's got it made. He's got the day job and the responsibility taken care of. And every waking hour is spent in the company of these amazing horses and like with all of the peccadillos that they have. And at the same time, you're having some success and you're making your own way. It's like it's a beautiful balance you've got going.
Yeah, possibly from the outside, Jared, it might look that way. But I guess not everyone's life is perfectly in order. Like, you know, when Frankie hit back for England, we had a baby boy, Keelan, and he's back in Lambert, so that's why I go over every couple of weeks or every 6 weeks or so to see him. And that's tough. Like, and there's no question that it was probably racing that left the situation the way it is. So yeah, while things may look good there for the outside, it's not all roses.
Fair enough. All the decisions come with consequences, I guess, is the
yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, listen, yeah, it's been brilliant having you on. It's a remarkable story. Continued success, and we're all going to pile in now on the
Shamalek
and the Kim.
Shame to one.
So by around the time he got going, my dad had a brain tumor, and that was his favorite. You know, it's a song, McGill and Marr. I don't know, your listeners might, you know, the Specsavers ad where the farmer is shearing the sheep, and he ends up shearing the collie. You know, that song that's in the background is McGill and Marr, and the first line of it is Shamalek. Shamalek Mogila Mar, and it was my dad's favorite song. It was sung at his funeral, and it'll be very fit. Well, he's already done. You know, he's won five times, so he's already doesn't owe us a thing. But it'd be awfully fitting if he could give us a run come Thursday the 12th.
Shamalek he's my hero. Is that it?
That's right. Yeah,
he's my warrior.
That's right, yeah.
Is that it? He's my hero or warrior?
Yeah, he's my hero. He's my hero. Yeah.
Well, listen.
Yeah, So, yeah, it'd be very, very fitting.
Absolutely. Well, listen, best of luck with it. Thanks a million, as I said, for making the time to talk to us.
No worries.
Up the banner, Brian.
Cheers, Brian.
Cheers, Brian. All the best.
That was a great guest this week. All the unexpected stories that you can get from Mason.
All-Ireland minor hurling winner. You're there on the day. You're under 18. You see the seniors win. Clare didn't win anything for years. And then, like, 20 years later, you're training winners. You've got a Cheltenham horse. You've got a Cheltenham chance this year.
I think... as well, like obviously, it's the same point I just made, it slightly differently though, that the wonder of having somebody go to Navan last week and put up a double like that when the powerhouses have their best runners out who are all like chomping at the bit to prove fitness in time for the Olympics of National Hunt, which we're on the doorstep of, but in the middle of all that for a part-time trainer who's come the circuitous route to get there to pop up and to have two winners and go, yeah, I can exhibit or I can exist and coexist with Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott and everybody else that has, you know, the power that they have is a fairly remarkable thing.
Well, it's back to the Tom Foley and Donoghue days and 1994 and going to Cheltenham and never been on a plane before and winning at Cheltenham with Charlie Swan and Peter Casey a few years ago with Flemingstar. These are the stories that make racing really attractive to the broad mass, and not just the superstars of the sport from the day to day.
Yeah,
we can't ignore. Like, they're all obviously brilliant as well, but these are the stories that the tapestry of Gaelic games, the community, and racing, that they're all kind of naturally intertwining,
and also that the name hasn't been picked by, you know, somebody's kid for no reason. It's like, this is the first few words of the song that was sung at my dad's funeral.
Yeah.
It's like there's a resonance and a meaning to that.
And him not knowing as well the next day, he doesn't know when he's going to have a winner with only 6 to 8 horses. And then to have two like within an hour and a half of each other, it's pretty special stuff. And hopefully for Brian that, you know, somebody will see this or whatever and say, oh, you know what, this guy can train. Because obviously he's picked up a lot from Nicky Henderson. He's working in a very interesting field regarding medicine. And all trainers do need is sometimes a break to see, you know what, this guy can train. Like, look at Gavin Cromwell, who we've had on Friday Night Racing before. Was a farrier with Gordon Elliott and now has trained a champion hurdle winner the last year. It can be done.
Absolutely. John, good stuff. Thanks
all right,
for joining us this week. I hope you enjoyed Friday Night Racing as much as we did this week. We'll be back next Friday afternoon on all of our social channels. The best place to get us is on offtheball.com or indeed on the Go Loud app, where OTB Sports Radio is broadcasting 24 hours a day. Thanks a million. See you next week.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.